This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Recently, the case of alleged rape victim Cheryl Zondi was under the spotlight, and the defense counsel in that case was accused of browbeating and badgering her on the witness stand. South Africans rallied in support of Cheryl Zondi, calling the cross-examination unfair, and some went as far as to say it was brutal and inhumane. However, not everyone views that cross-examination style as harsh, and some legal experts are reportedly saying that the cross-examination is an example of what we lawyers call, and I quote, robust questioning. Yeah, well, we'll discuss that with our guest in a few moments. Whatever the case may be, ultimately judges must hear the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, and witnesses must be told... Yeah, the black-eyed peas don't lie. Talking of lies, these days the only time politicians tell the truth is when they call each other a liar. Joining us today is criminal law specialist attorney Martin Hood, who knows all about lying witnesses. Welcome to you, Martin.
Afternoon.
And truthful witnesses, I guess, as well.
All my witnesses are truthful.
All your clients are innocent. How does an attorney sleep? First he lies on one side and then he lies on the other. Something like that. Mark our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Our Twitter handle at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. And our partner today, Legal Talk South Africa, with 200,000 very, very ardent members. Marvelous to have them on board with us. Welcome again, Martin. I mean, you've done so many criminal cases. I've also done my fair share. We all know that the lawyer most sought by someone who's in the KAK is that sharp cross-examiner. You want him on your side. He gets the opponent to squirm and buckle and concede. We love those kind of lawyers. We've seen them in the movies. We pay them top dollar for their services in court. Now, the question, Mart, is that the lawyer in the case of that poor rape victim, Cheryl Zondi, has taken a great deal of flack in the way he cross-examined her. And he was accused, as I said earlier, of badgering her. The question to you is, what are the legal bounds of cross-examination? And from reports that you may have read, did he overstep the mark?
Wow. lots to say. Yes, he definitely overstepped the mark. And I'll explain why in a few moments. The sharpest cross-examiner doesn't need to be the most aggressive or the most vicious. And I think that's something that we need to come back to as well. Mm. We also need, I think, and rape is a very serious subject, and it comes with its own particular, in proving a rape, there are some very specific difficulties with the offence itself, and we must be aware of what those difficulties are. The first is that it almost invariably is going to necessitate the complainant giving evidence, and that often in itself is extremely traumatic because the complainant is exposed to this type of aggressive, demeaning, and I would say unconstitutional in certain respects, cross-examination. Mm. So that's the first point. The second point is that there's no or little physical evidence other than testimony that can be used to prove rape. The only real other evidence would be semen samples if they can be obtained. But again, in obtaining a semen sample, there's a certain amount of compromise that the complainant has to go through as well, in having those samples taken.
Mm.
So it's there's a very particular set of very difficult circumstances applicable to any rape victim. And unfortunately, our law has been slow to develop in protecting victims of rape. And cross-examination and unlimited cross-examination is one of the biggest issues, because a person's sexual history becomes the subject of minute examination, and the sexual conduct in the rape becomes an issue. And we must also bear in mind that because rape is such a direct personal offense, it's the word often of the complainant against the rapist.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we have precautionary rules that have to be applied when it comes to assessing evidence of a single witness in any criminal offense.
Mm.
So it's particularly difficult for a judicial officer to accept the evidence of one witness over that of another witness, because an accused will also be a witness if they give evidence.
Mm.
So it's
especially when the accused says she consented, which is 99% of the excuses that are raised by rape accused, isn't it?
Yes.
And you know, it was all consensual.
Yes. And she enjoyed it. And
terrible stuff.
Such horrible.
That is why so many women are afraid to come forward.
And as I said, our law has been very slow to develop to accommodate the trauma that goes with rape. I mean, it's been categorized by some legal commentators as worse than murder, because the victim has to live with the rape.
Yes.
And that's not to demean anyone that's knows someone who had family members murdered. It's just a comment. Mm. So rape in itself is a very particular type of crime that comes with very, very big difficulties in proving it.
Mm.
And then we have to bear in mind as well that rapists sometimes term rape when it's not rape.
Mm.
When there has been consent and then there's been consequences that have not been to the liking of the complainant.
Yes.
So we do have false claims of rape, and of course we must bear in mind that to be accused of rape in itself unjustifiably can destroy a person's reputation.
Mm.
So again,
one must bear that in mind.
There's a complex set of circumstances that contextualize the issue of rape.
Mm.
And I want to stress again that we're not all equipped to deal with a rape trial. I have no difficulties with the freedom of the media, but even the reporting of the cross-examination of the attorney involved in the Zondi case must have caused some trauma to her and to her family as well, to have the questions publicized and put into the public domain. A very, very, very difficult environment to maintain your ability to give evidence in a believable way. Very, very difficult.
Have you seen some of the questions that were put to the complainant?
Well, there's one that sticks in my mind in particular, which I find absolutely disgusting. And I think, first of all, hats off to Cheryl Zondi for doing this. I'm not pronouncing on the guilt otherwise of anybody, but the fact that she was prepared to go through the ordeal of giving evidence, hats off to her.
Mm.
But the degree of penetration, the amount of penetration,
it has no real bearing on it, does it?
What woman in their right frame of mind going through a trauma like that is going to assess how deep someone's penetrating them?
Mm.
And we must remember,
and to recall it as well.
And if one looks at the definition of rape, it's penetration. It's not 1 inch or 1 centimeter, it's penetration.
Yes.
That's rape.
Yes.
So that question was unjustified, in my view, in the context of what the offense actually is.
Do you know if the prosecutor objected to that?
I think from the reports that I've seen, I think the judge objected very strongly.
Mm.
And being a female judge, I think that she had a certain amount of understanding of how demeaning
that type of questioning was. Yes.
She stopped and she reprimanded the attorney concerned, Mr. Dauberman.
Is he an attorney or an advocate?
He's been reported as an attorney. I don't know if he's an attorney or an advocate. I saw him wearing an attorney's gown in court, so it may well be that he's an attorney, but I don't know.
What's it, for our listeners, what's the difference between an attorney's gown and an advocate's gown?
Attorney's gown has, well, that's all going to be changed shortly as well. Mm. Attorney doesn't wear a bib in a lower court. He has a gown that's got buttons in front, and counsel generally doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And at the back, the advocate's gown has what we call a begging pouch normally, where you're supposed to put your money into.
Yes, absolutely, from the old days.
Martin,
there's something I want to talk to you about, and we don't have a lot of time, and it's such an interesting topic, all this. There's some guidelines that the Department of Justice has published for prosecutors in sexual offences cases, and I'm sure they know about it, and they need carry these out. Tell us about some of the guidelines, and especially those on objecting to aggressive cross-examination.
So I think what we need to do first of all is we need to be aware that there's guidelines in respect of sexual offences, and then there's guidelines in respect of children and sexual offences.
Mm.
Now, for those of us who go into criminal courts, some of the courts that we see have got video conferencing equipment. And the theory is that a person does not need to physically confront their accuser. They can give evidence either in camera, which means it's not in public court.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to stress again that Cheryl Zondi elected not to exercise her right to have it heard in camera. And again, hats off to her for her strength in doing things in public. The complainant can give evidence by way of video link. They can be separated from their accuser. And in certain circumstances, there can even be an intermediary involved where it's necessary in terms of either interpretation or the giving of evidence in another way. And I want to also stress another difficulty that we have in our court system, and that is the use of interpreters. So in a rape trial, it may be that a complainant wants to give evidence in her own home language, which the judicial officer may not be familiar with.
Mm.
And that necessitates the use of an interpreter, and that interpreter more often than not is going to be male. And there's always the problem of circumstantial bias. So that male may interpret what the evidence of the complainant is giving in his context as opposed to the complainant's context.
Yes.
So the many difficulties with the giving of evidence, and these guidelines are an attempt to try and deal with some of the inherent challenges.
Mm.
So you're supposed to have specially trained prosecutors, but again, in many courts throughout our country, we have one, possibly two prosecutors, a regional and a district court prosecutor. They don't have time to be specialist prosecutors.
Mm.
But the guidelines, and unfortunately, being guidelines, they're not compulsory.
Mm.
And often there's simply not the resources. But the guidelines say you need specialist prosecutors. There should be consultation with the victim. Now, that means that the prosecutor should actually consult with
sit with the complainant as a defense attorney would sit with his client,
and due to the overburdened nature of our criminal justice system, I'll give a simple example, and again this is a disincentive for people to come forward and lay charges of rape. You've got to have a private consultation room where a person feels comfortable to talk about rape. You can't expect a person to sit down in a dingy office with people coming and going into that office. It might be a shared office and talk about how you were raped.
Mm.
So the right facilities to have consultations have to be there, let alone the consultations themselves. And they don't exist in many courts.
Mm. I mean, I've seen prosecutors going to court. The first time they know what's going on is when they open the docket kind of thing. And they see the complainant statement. They may be new to the case.
I don't want to put our criminal justice system on trial, but that is indeed the case. And in many, many instances, cases are lost because of a lack of preparation on the part of prosecutors who simply don't have the time and the resources.
Mm.
So, and that impacts directly, and we have to understand the trauma that goes with rape. So for a person for a complainant to go through a rape case, they have to overcome all of these hurdles before they actually get into court. And then undergo cross-examination.
Yeah, it's frightening.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. And
let's talk about the proceedings in court, which is number 10 of the guidelines. Have you got that, Mark?
I've got it, yeah.
What is that?
Well, first of all, I think we need to understand what cross-examination is, because this says that the prosecutor should act to prevent unnecessary and aggressive cross-examination.
Mm.
Now, our system of law is what's called an adversarial system. And adversarial means confrontational. So you test evidence by way of confronting it. So in reality, that means that the person that wants to cross-examine somebody can put questions in a strong, forceful, demanding way.
Mm.
And the criminal justice system promotes this adversarial environment, unfortunately.
Mm.
So the result is that for particularly a rape victim who's already undergone trauma, who's very emotional, she's going to be, or he, because rape applies to male and female, they are going to be faced with an environment where a defense attorney or advocate's going to stand up and make accusations against them to test their evidence. Now, the purpose of cross-examination is to test evidence. You don't necessarily test evidence by shouting at a witness.
Yes.
You ask questions.
Yes.
And you ask questions to probe that evidence to test its truthfulness.
Mm.
And you're also required in cross-examination to put a version of the defense to the witness to say, we will testify that you consented to sexual intercourse. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, if you don't...
then you can't raise it.
You
it's
can't
a very,
raise
it's,
it.
It's very problematic in a criminal trial if you don't put a version, because then you can't argue that the version of the witness is dishonest or...
You've got to give the complainant every opportunity of responding to
They have to have the opportunity to respond to a version.
Mm. Mm.
But in going through the cross-examination process where you want to put a version to a witness, a complainant, you are trying to discredit or make that version appear to be untrue.
Mm.
And you test it. Mm. And it's cross-examination is not a difficult concept. It's something that any parent often does with their child. Where's the biscuit gone? Why is the biscuit container empty? You were the only person in the kitchen.
Mm.
And so forth.
Mm.
So cross-examination...
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. So cross-examination is not a complex concept at all. It's simply asking questions to test whether the person has been telling the truth.
I think a lot of aggressive boom-boom attorneys think that if they shout at the witness, it's going to help them.
Well,
in fact, it's counterproductive very often.
It often is. And again, these prosecutorial or these guidelines for sexual offences cast an obligation on the prosecutor to stop it, and also the judicial officer.
Yes.
Fortunately, my experience is that whilst cross-examination might get a little bit aggressive, judicial officers tend to take a very robust approach to it, and if it does overstep whatever they believe is an appropriate boundary, then they stop the cross-examination and say, we think that you should ask questions in a less confrontational way, or maybe you shouldn't ask a question like that.
Let's talk a little, Martin, unless I'm interrupting
you,
about cross-examination of children. And this is always a tough one. How much reliance can be placed on the evidence of a child? And that's the first question.
Wow. I've said that our legal system has been slow to develop in certain circumstances. It has recognized that the giving of evidence by children needs a particular approach.
Mm.
Everything is great in theory, but again, in practice, it tends to fall down. Our courts recognize that children's evidence needs to be regarded with appropriate caution. And what that means is a child, and particularly a young child, you can break it into different age categories, below 7, above 7, 7 to 14. A child is, a particular young child, is subject to very strong influences and is easily influenced. So the testimony of a young child is very, very, very difficult to obtain, first of all. And it's quite easy, if you allow cross-examination of a child for that child to contradict themselves or to be intimidated into saying the wrong thing.
Mm.
Now, the difficulty we have is that our criminal justice system is based upon the fact that rather 10 guilty people go free than one innocent person is convicted,
mm.
which is why we have this concept of reasonable doubt. If there is reasonable doubt, then the person must be acquitted because they have to be proven guilty beyond reasonable doubt. And it's an accepted standard throughout most of the Western world.
Mm.
So when you have a young child, if you allow a legal representative to cross-examine that young child directly, that child can easily be confused or intimidated.
Mm.
And there are certain processes that have been accepted to allow the giving of child's evidence. Evidence through an intermediary, particularly a professional such as a psychologist, where the psychologist can act, and I use the word very loosely, as a translator.
Mm.
They can translate the question into the level of understanding that that child has.
Yes.
They can also assist the court with expert evidence. They can say to a magistrate, a judicial officer, this child has a certain level of understanding and their evidence supports that level of understanding, or that child does not know what it's saying. It does not understand
the question, really.
The question.
Mm.
So the use of intermediaries, but again, not every court has a psychologist on hand. State resources are very limited. Separation of the witness from the accused. I mean, often, unfortunately, there is a close relationship between the child and the person that's the accused, and that relationship can be abused. So we need to keep the child and the accused separate
in a separate room.
In a separate room with one way glass.
I mean, do you know if there are these facilities for kids all over in the,
no,
in the
not.
Townships in,
No.
Not there.
The giving of the use of video conferencing facilities in regional courts it is becoming more frequent, so you can give the evidence by way of remote video link.
Yes.
But then I also want to make this point, and again it's a question of balancing competing interests. As a defense attorney, and let's not talk about rape, let's talk about any offense. As a defense attorney, you want to cross-examine a witness and you want to see the demeanor of the person. You want to see how they respond to questions. You want to detect weaknesses. You want to detect shortcomings in their evidence.
Mm.
And having an intermediary involved, for example, does act, it impairs the...
Well, it's always been like that with interpreters. It does impair the...
It impairs cross-examination.
It does, yeah.
So,
fortunately, today we have black judges that very often understand the language that the...
Gary, I can't tell you how many times I've been in court when a magistrate, it doesn't matter so much about color, a magistrate said, but that's not what the witness said.
Yes, I've
the
also
seen... The witness said the following.
Yes, I've also seen that.
And and that's a positive, but at the same time, it highlights the shortcomings in our system.
Yes.
And those shortcomings are myriad. And again, going to cross-examination, having cross-examination by some sort of remote control or with some sort of intervention between you and the subject matter doesn't necessarily work very fairly in favor of the accused legal representative either. So it's a question of balancing different interests, unfortunately. And those resources simply are not on the ground.
Martin, we don't have much time left. Anything exciting that you're involved in that you want to talk about, or is it the run of the mill?
Well, we've spoken about the firearms environment a little bit in a different show.
In the previous show, yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, at this stage, I just want to, being the end of the year, we tend to have an upsurge, unfortunately, in family violence and family and domestic disputes.
Mm.
And I'm already beginning to see it.
Yeah, tragic.
It's tragic, and I'd like to prevail upon everybody, be reasonable, understand the circumstances. And
don't pull out your shotgun, whatever you
get.
Do.
Get some help before you engage in something that you may regret
for the rest of your life. We've been talking to Martin Hood. Mark your website for this podcast.
mjhood.co.za.
Yeah, join one of the nearly 5,000 people that interact with Martin, mainly on firearm issues, I think.
I get general. I get lots of queries. I always endeavor to answer on Facebook or via email. Yeah. Send me a question. If I can answer it, I will. If I can't, I'll refer you.
I look forward to following this case in which Cheryl Zondi is the complainant and to see how it pans out. She was very brave, and we commend her for that.
I wouldn't I wouldn't be surprised if there's a conviction. I've no doubt that there's going to be an appeal, because Mr. Dalberman has already made the point that he believes his cross-examination was limited. Mm. If there is an appeal, I think that we can see some level of judicial pronouncement on the manner of the cross-examination.
Yeah. Look forward to following that one. You'll be back, Martin Hood. Many thanks for this contribution. To you, our listener, thank you for listening. Until next week, cheers for now.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.